You are listening to the Rouge Report, brought to you by Young's Equipment, your Vaderstad headquarters. As this year's crop goes in the bin, it's never too early to plan ahead for next year's seeding season. Vaderstad Seed Hawk seeders are known for their ability to maximize the potential of the plant. Vaderstad, precise, reliable. Remember to go to youngs.ca, use the podcast code Rouge, R-O-U-G-E, for your chance to win a Rider's Prize package.
Welcome to the Rouge Report, presented by Young's Equipment.
I'm Cody Fajardo.
And I'm Isaac Harker.
Follow along as we tackle CFL topics one point at a time. Rough Rider Podcast.
Welcome into a very special episode for two reasons. First of all, it's the 20th episode of the Rouge Report. We have an incredible guest that we interviewed, Kevin Glenn. We can't wait for you guys to listen in and share your feedback on that. But also, the co-host's birthday was yesterday, Isaac Harker. Happy 25th birthday, I believe.
25th, still a young pup.
Yeah, young pup, man. What'd you do for your birthday?
Well, we had the whole family over. We're having some dinner and everything, and it's always been a tradition. Like, this is my first time not playing football my birthday or, like, around it for so long. So we got some friends and family together out in the yard, played some two-hand touch, tossing the pigskin around a little bit.
How are you spinning it? Were you slinging it, and grandma's got to make a play for you? Like,
oh, listen, my sister's open. It's coming right at her forehead. Yeah. She's got to get her head around. I'm like, run the route.
Yeah, you got a lot of frozen peas on deck for eyeballs. Oh, yeah, that's awesome. So is there any tradition food-wise that you do? Do you do a certain cake or pie or something?
Oh, yeah. Yellow cake with chocolate frosting every year.
Yellow cake. What's inside of a yellow cake?
I have no idea, but it's so good.
Just call it yellow cake. I like it.
Just call it yellow cake.
Does it say happy birthday, Isaac?
Usually just get a couple of birthday. Happy sixth birthday. No, it's funny you say that because my mom has had this like football themed like banner since I've been like eight, and she always puts it up, and it's up, and I'm just 25, and I'm just like laughing so hard. It's so, I but love
that's
it.
Cool.
It makes me feel so special, dude.
And when you have kids, you're going to hang that exact poster up for your kids. And that's what's going to be cool.
Yeah. It's just going to go on for generations.
Well, does it look like it's been around that long, or is it still in pristine condition?
I mean, it's still in great condition for when it was, but like the typeface, you can tell it was made in like 2005.
But that's the honestly, that kind of stuff is coming back. It's
no
crazy.
I'm seeing
disposable cameras in stores and stuff like that. Like all that stuff coming back.
Cameras are all the rage now, dude.
Yeah, I know. Got to talk about our big bet last week when we talked about the Titans versus the Steelers, and it was a blowout early. And all of a sudden, here comes the Titans, and I'm like, oh my gosh, no way! And turns out
my mouth was watering. I was just like, oh, I'm about to get this blizzard. Let's go.
No, I was in complete control the entire time. And so I felt really good about it until that last second kick. I was like, Gostkowski, this guy is money. Other than week one, he's been money. And then,
well, listen,
sure
if the Titans
enough,
had Brett Lowther, I'd be eating a Dairy Queen as we speak.
See, that's the thing. We got to get Lowther. I direct messaged the Jaguars on social media and said, how many retweets to get a workout for my boy Brett Lowther? And they never messaged me back. So I'm still waiting on that. And hopefully that'll come here pretty soon. Maybe I have to be that one stalker guy who just keeps sending him messages.
Oh, yeah.
And Isaac Harker during the recruiting process.
just keep pestering everyone. Cold calling agents.
Looking at week seven in the NFL before we get to our Kevin Glenn interview, anything that stands out to you? For me, it's the Washington Football Club that just dismantled the Cowboys 25-3.
Yeah.
I mean, you still have Ezekiel Elliott, even though Dalton went down, you still have the number one, arguably the number one running back in the NFL, and he hasn't done anything once Dak has gone down, which does Dak deserve more money now that they are just a completely different team?
That's what I'm thinking. I mean, it looks like he's the straw that stirs the drink. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, no doubt. I mean, look at the numbers, and the numbers don't lie, right? Niners dismantling the Patriots. Cam Newton gets benched with three picks.
Yeah, that's, I mean, and then Tom Brady absolutely spanks the Raiders by 25. So it's kind of a bad look for the Patriots.
369 and four touchdowns. Yeah, it's the team I like watching, honestly, is the Panthers. Like, they are talented, but they're not the most talented team, but they just find a way to stay in ball games. And they lost to the Saints by three. Mm-hmm. The upset scare of the week was the Jets were, I believe the Jets were beating the Bills 10-0.
They had 4 yards in the second half.
That's it?
Total yards of offense in the second half.
I didn't know that. That breaks my heart for them over there.
That's real tough. They were up 10-0. Well, listen, the Bills, like, I forget, it was some crazy stat line. The Bills didn't punt. The Jets had 4 total yards of offense in the second half. Bills only won by 8.
Yeah, that's weird. That just was the weather bad? I didn't get to watch much football because I was down in SoCal with Laura, but was the weather bad?
No, I mean, it was in Buffalo, so it was cold, but it like wasn't Canadian weather. You know what I'm saying?
This late in the year, man, last year we talked about that before the show. The coldest I think you've ever been, one of the coldest games I've ever been a part of, was that game at Edmonton. Talk to us about the panic decision to buy $20 socks.
Here we go.
To keep you warm, and you were a popsicle on the sideline.
I told you that in confidence. Okay, so here's what I'm thinking. I know it's going to be cold, so I go to I don't even remember what the sporting goods place was. I didn't even look. I go up to the cashier. I'm like, I need the warmest, nicest pair of socks you have. He gives me these socks. I'm like, cool. I'm about to be so warm during this game. It felt like I had nothing on my feet. I had layers upon layers. It felt like the wind was just cutting into my bones. And I don't want to be that rookie who doesn't play that's just standing in front of the heater the whole game. So I'm like, yeah, trying to let the players like use the coats who are going to play and then stand in front of the heater. By the time the fourth quarter comes, I cannot feel my feet. Like,
that's a good, yeah.
That. I'm like, if Cody went down, I'd have to run over to the heater and just stick my feet inside the fire for like a good minute and a half before I had to like go out there.
I've had some trial and error getting in Canada and learning how to play in the cold. Two of my greatest findings was, the first one is, if I heat up my helmet, the inside of my helmet, but you can't go too close because it'll melt your helmet. If you heat the helmet up and you put it on your head, it warms your entire body. So before every series in a cold game, you'll see me go over to the heater, put my helmet in front of it for about 3-4 seconds and put it on my head, and my body's entirely warm.
I put the helmet 350 for 10 minutes and then head out on the field for first drive.
Yeah, exactly. And then the second thing, Sean Lemon actually taught me this in the Grey Cup in the snow. You got to have a jacket buddy on defense and offense. And the reason why is, when you have the jacket on, it's great. And then you take the jacket off, you put it down, and it just collects all the cold. But if you have another guy's body warming that up while you're out there playing, you got something to look forward to when you come to the sideline after a touchdown. So it's a jacket buddy, offense and defense. So you got to get one next year. The problem is, we can't be jacket buddies because we're both on offense. So you got to find a defensive player.
Exactly.
And then, and my worst trial and error decision was that game, the Edmonton game. Do you remember I put Icy Hot on my legs before I put my tights on?
Yes.
Because I thought it would warm me up, and it did. It definitely warmed me up. But once you hit the cold or the icy part of the hot, which I wasn't really thinking about, I was completely frozen. And then it starts burning you because it's so cold, it's burning you because it's under your tights. And you're like, I had to change my tights at halftime because my legs felt like they were legitimately on fire or frostbite.
Dude, before the game, I'm putting on my socks. I'm all smug. I'm like, I'm going to be so warm. And then I look over at you and you're just lathering icy hot on your legs. I'm like, what is this man doing?
I'm glad you didn't follow my lead there, Isaac, because I would have led you down a terrible path.
Well, in my mind, I'm like, this guy's like, he's a vet. Like, I gotta figure it out. This guy gets it. And then at halftime, you told me, dude, my legs are so cold, I'm getting freezer burn.
Yeah, so your $20 socks was at least a better panic than my hot.
They got lost in the wash. They got lost in the wash. So I got to wear them one time. They didn't work.
Oh, you never got them back?
Never got them back.
You need to send Gordy a, you need to send him an invoice for your $20 socks.
Dude, they don't even work. It was just, it was a sunk cost at that point.
Oh man, that's hilarious. Yeah, those cold games. That's how you win the Grey Cup, though. You got to win in the cold, and you got to be a team that can win in the cold. Just last thing, World Series wise, have you been watching much baseball? I thought 2 games ago was the best World Series game I've ever seen.
Yeah, the ending was absolutely nuts, like craziness.
2 errors on the ending, and the Dodgers score 7 runs in that game on 2 outs. Like, that is unheard of, right? Dude,
and like he rounds third, he falls. You're like, okay, it's curtains for the Rays. No, 2 errors. He goes ahead, just dives on home plate, starts slapping it. Game. Crazy. Yeah.
I've never seen Laura so excited for baseball. And that was, she was like jumping up and down. And I'm like, does she like one of these teams? But she was just excited with the whole moment. And that got me fired up. And I was like, that was crazy. And it's going to go down. If the Rays win at all, it's going to go down for one of the biggest, because that guy's out at home without a doubt. It's out at home, and they go into extra innings. But that man, I'm hurting for my man, Shaq Evans. I text him after the game and he was pretty hot. So I just kind of sent him one thing and just, I'm thinking about you, Shaq. And he was pretty pissed, so then I just left it there. But without further ado, we're getting to the 18-year CFL vet. This interview was probably one of my favorites. Very insightful, some controversy questions answered, which we always love on here. And so I hope you guys enjoy it. Please don't forget to like, subscribe, and write us your feedback, because we're always looking forward to that.
Enjoy. Direct West is a proud sponsor of the Rouge Report. Are you a busy business owner needing help with your marketing? Things like updating your Google listing, thinking of a headline for a billboard, or making sure your website is in good shape? That's where Direct West comes in. Let them help with over 100 years of expertise at directwest.com.
Welcome into the episode 20 of the Rouge Report. We are here with 18-year CFL vet, KG the GOAT. How's it going, KG?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing fine. A little cold, a little chilly here in Michigan, but it's all right.
How cold you got there?
It's you guys are going to be like mad at me. It's like 46 degrees.
Oh, 46. Oh, man. I just flew in from SoCal this morning, and I landed. It was 29 degrees here in Reno, Nevada. And everyone thinks Nevada's hot, but not in northern Nevada. So I'm going through it right now.
So, you are. So I don't feel so bad now.
Yeah.
Up there by the lakes, I figured it'd be way colder.
No. It's just made a drastic turn really, really quick, because it was nice last week, and then all of a sudden now it's like 40s, in the 40s, so it seems a little bit colder than it actually is.
Yeah.
Off the top here, I got two questions for you, KG. First one, what is the secret sauce, secret recipe for sticking around 18 years in professional football? And the second one, you got to give me one play or one moment out of 18 years that sticks out the most.
Oh, okay. So the secret sauce, I'll say it's fast food and you know what? I think it has a lot to do with the mentality. You know, I would tell a lot of people, like, every year, like going into training camp, you get new younger guys in. It was more so just the mentality, knowing and telling yourself that you should be here, you can be here, and kind of that, you know, you have to be here type of mentality, where I never thought that, you know, them bringing a young guy in, that I was going to, you know, kind of fall off type thing. So that, and then, I mean, we all know that, you know, football is a very, very physical sport. So you do have to concentrate and do what you need to do in the off season in order to be prepared to come in when when training camp starts. There was a 5 or 6 year stint where I did not pick up a ball and throw until maybe like late April. Yeah. So, you know, arm wise, I never had any, you know, trouble with any arm injuries or any trouble, you know, like going into training camp where my arm would be, you know, fatigued or hurt. So I would say it was about my last 6 years, the off season was more so just working out, staying in condition and basically not picking up a football actually until like late April.
That, I mean, that's a great point. Before we get to that second part of the question, I think different quarterbacks are different types of players. I'm with you. I'm not a big time thrower. I usually pick the ball up around March, and you're a month after me, which is kind of crazy. And I know Isaac personally is a big time thrower. He likes to throw throughout the entire offseason. So it's just interesting to hear that from you. And I feel the same way when I get to training camp. The one thing is my arm is never the issue. It's like, man, I did not let it just run dry throughout the entire offseason. So I'm good. It's glad to know that I'm doing something right in the offseason, man.
That's right. I do believe, like you said, that that's something that, you know, as you get older, it's not a lot about if you can physically do it. You know you can physically do it, but it's mm-hmm. more so maintaining, you know, that preventative maintenance to where you can last you know, an entire CFL season plus the playoffs. So,
yeah, the way you initially answered it, I was about to keep a McDouble on the sidelines and it would say KG secret stuff.
I got a story about that, about the sidelines and like things that you eat, but I'll tell you, we'll talk about that later. The second part, I would have to say it was the pass in Edmonton. What was it, the 99 yarder to mm-hmm. or was it the 100? I don't remember how many yards it was. It was just the end of the game. I would never forget Danny Machocha's face on the screen after Milt caught it and they, you know, and he ran in for the touchdown. So that probably is probably one of the biggest highlights.
It's incredible, huh? When you can throw the ball and just watch your receiver. Last year we had a 98-yard touchdown, and you just see your receiver going down. And the guys who are the most excited is not the quarterback, not the receiver. It's the big dogs up front because they one play done. Hey, that's it. I got no more work to do.
That's probably the fastest you'll ever see them run from the line of scrimmage to the end zone to greet. And share that that excitement with that receiver that caught that pass.
We got to put a clock on them because that's a great point. And then they can put it on their combine stats that I ran 99 yards in whatever, 6 seconds.
That would be awesome.
And I feel like everybody knows this because you're kind of unique in the way you've been under contract for all the CFL teams. And it's kind of a two-parter. What does that mean to you getting to play for all of them? And then secondly, and most importantly, do you have gear from every team you've played for still?
Oh, so being affiliated with all of them is awesome. I mean, I got a chance to live in some of the, you know, some very great cities up there in Canada. Got to experience every province. So it was a really, really good experience. I think the best part about it is like the retirement part where when people ask me, well, what team did you play for? And I'm going to feel about, well, I was affiliated with every team. And I'm the only guy in CFL history to do that. So it like literally starts a whole nother conversation. And it makes the conversation go probably a little bit longer than if I would have only played for like one or two teams. So it's a really good like conversation builder, and especially being here retired and people still know that, you know, that I played, but some of that those other facts, they actually don't know. What I'm waiting for is it to be a question on Jeopardy.
Oh yeah,
that would be sick. You know,
the ultimate form of validation.
Yeah, that's that. There you go. Once it hits Jeopardy and it's a question, you know, who is Kevin Glenn is the answer. I mean, that's when you know you've made it.
I'm writing Alex Trebek an email right now.
Right. My favorite thing was the Great Cup. You have your own little fan Kevin Glenn group where they all wear their own team jerseys. What's that?
The Wandering Glenn.
I love that. That was awesome. Yeah.
So they've built a connection because the special part is that each person is from a different city, like where I actually play. Like it's not like a group of friends in Saskatchewan got together and put on different jerseys. Like it's a guy from Montreal, it's a guy from Saskatchewan, it's a guy from Toronto, it's a fan from every city, which is that's the best part about it, you know,
because I was gonna ask, like, you brought fans who are opposing teams who hate each other, you know, on game day, and you brought them together just by your playing career and teams you signed with. That's, I mean, that's got to feel pretty special that you've made a big impact like that on people's lives to want to do that every single Grey Cup. Like, I've been to two and I've seen them, both those Grey Cups, supporting proud and staying loud.
Yeah, it is. It's great to see that, because we all know that, especially what's going on in the world today, that sports a lot of times brings people together from different sides and different walks of life. So like you said, when you have, you know, a Saskatchewan Rough Rider fan and a Winnipeg Blue Bomber fan actually hanging out and cheering and partying together at a Grey Cup, you think you've done something good.
Yeah, no doubt. I have a little bit of controversy question for you. Which team did you enjoy playing for most? I'm sure you get this a lot, and the political answer is probably wherever I was located at. But now, let's break the news to everybody. Which one you got for us?
Oh, so I'm going to go. So first, I'm going to tell you the best, because I get this one, and it's kind of a two-part, because then they say, well, where was the best city that you actually lived in?
Okay.
That city would have to be BC, Vancouver.
Yeah, no doubt.
That Northwest living is pretty nice. The mountains, and it's just beautiful. We stayed in White Rock, and thanks to Dave Dickinson at the time, he let me rent his apartment out, his condo in White Rock. And
okay, living good out there.
Let's go.
Sushi, no fast food.
Oh man, yes, all day. It was a great pizza place. That's when I kind of got, like, I never had goat cheese on a pizza. Uh-huh. Oh, and I found out goat cheese and spinach on a pizza was just awesome.
Game changer.
Oh man. The best place, though, this is a tough one. And I always go back to, because I try to go back to where I spent most of my time, but then I get caught because I spent the same amount of time in Saskatchewan that I did in Winnipeg. Uh-huh. You know, so I would probably, oh man.
Come on, KG.
I'm going to have to postpone this to a second podcast episode.
I'm scared. You
know what? I'm going to have to say Winnipeg, because that's where I got my first, like, legitimate, like, start and the starter on the team. And it was kind of, you know, it was my team to go out and, you know, job to lose and all that kind of stuff. So I would say Winnipeg.
I know that.
I'm gonna have some Saskatchewan, probably family members out there that are probably texting right after they hear the episode.
But that's a good point. I mean, that's a great point that you, honestly, it's where you get your first start, and getting that opportunity is, I think, the hardest part in professional sports. Doesn't matter what sport. It's like everybody has talent, but when you get that, like the solidification, or they're like, hey, you're our guy, this is your franchise, like that just means so much more to you in your heart than just playing for a team.
It does. It shows you that, you know, that the team, the franchise believes in you. And not saying that any other the other teams that I played for, that they didn't believe in me. But
no
like
doubt.
You said, the first opportunity that you get, or that this is your team, it sits a little bit, you know, it sits in your heart a little bit more.
And I kind of have a follow up question, because the last team you signed for was the Edmonton Eskimos in 2018 to complete the tour of the league. How much did that go into the decision? Like, okay, this is the last team I got to play for to complete the tour.
No, a whole lot. And I think Sutherland at the time, he kind of knew. He was like, you know, like, hey, it was between him and a couple of that team and probably two other teams. And he kind of knew, he was like, hey, like, you'll complete the tour. You know, you'll have an opportunity to maybe play, you know, and, you know, that was kind of a lie, because Mike was probably the most durable guy at the time.
Yeah.
Like 2 or 3 years with him without him getting hurt or missing a game. So, but that had a lot to play with it. And it was because of, you know, doing something that no one has ever done, not ever getting an opportunity to play. And then at the time, I thought that Edmonton was a pretty good shot, you know, for us to go out and win.
Yeah. No doubt.
It was a pretty stacked squad over there at certain positions. So it was just that opportunity to, you know, to experience something new. And I was always big on that. Like, you know how many offensive game, like offensive coordinators that I've went through, and just offensive minded individuals that I've been around. Like that was like a, it was like one of those things that I relished. It was like, I took it as a competition to go out and try to, you know, learn this new offense and go through training camp. I mean, like BC, it was an opportunity where I showed up like a week before training camp started.
Yeah.
So wow. The first time that I ever seen the offense was in training camp. So, you know, so I took that kind of stuff, you know, as a personal challenge. And I mean, it worked out. Like I had a pretty good, I think pretty good successful career at doing it.
It was always interesting for me when I was hanging around like Ricky Ray and Travis Soule, and they would be like, okay, this play I can take back from 2008. And I'm like, what? You know, right. you have like all 18 years of offenses, and it's weird how you, one thing sticks in your mind. And so learning that many different offenses, did it make it easier or harder to learn the playbook because you had so many just concepts and ideas and terminology in your brain that it was hard to get it out? Or is it easier because you can kind of correlate and relate them to each other?
A little bit of both, because it helped me because, right, I could think about plays and read wise, you know, what we were doing in certain offenses because I've ran it before. The tough part was the verbiage, because you have to pick up a whole new, you know, a whole new language. It's like learning a whole new language at times. And then especially if it's a play, the same play but a different name. It's crazy because right now I coach high school football and we'll be out on the field. And I'll say a play name, and the guys be looking at me like I'm crazy. And they be like, "Coach, you don't have a play call like
that."
Like,
install that.
I'm like, "Hold on, Vader's not a call." I'm like, "Oh no, it's Simba." Yeah. Like I'm calling plays from Canada that I've been around for so many times. It's the same play but a different name.
Love
and
it.
I'll call it to the guys, and the guys are looking at me like, "We don't have a play call here." So it's one of those things, like you said, like it's a kind of a twofold thing where it helped me because I could transition those plays and kind of like understand the reads and what the offensive coordinator was trying to get accomplished. But at the same time, like sometimes you call a play a different name and you'd be like very, very adamant that this is the name of the play, but it really wasn't. It was from a team that you were with 2 years ago.
Yeah. Wow.
And on the show, we like to get into a little bit of like the recruiting process from high school to college. And what was that like kind of being a shorter quarterback? And we also have that Missouri Valley connection. I guess it was the Gateway Conference when you were playing. Yeah. But yeah, Illinois State. Who was the real ISU? Because I went to Indiana State. You went to Illinois State.
in our respective states, you were the ISU. And then I was the official ISU. We'll do it like that.
He's so already said one controversial thing on here. It can't be two.
I will say this. I don't think I've ever lost to Indiana State.
Ooh, okay.
Oh no.
Maybe I also had another. That was probably my second, like college memory would have been at Indiana State, backed up on a -2, and I threw a 98 yarder to win the game.
To got win the game. How much time was left?
Probably about 15 seconds.
Oh my gosh.
Oh man. Man.
Yeah.
You called game on your own 2 yard line.
Yeah. So, but the recruiting process was a little different because that coming out of the school that I came out of, it was huge as far as recruiting was concerned, but there weren't really a lot of quarterbacks that were going to school. They were basically taking the quarterbacks and changing their position. And so at one point in my junior year, I kind of like fell into a trap thinking, you know what? I'm probably not going to play quarterback at the next level. And the beginning of my senior year, they did a story on the front page of the Free Press. And the actual guy who wrote the story is still here, like writing for the Free Press. But he told me that I would never, you know, he said probably the best quarterback in the state, but probably won't ever play at the next level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, I had to have like a long, you know, like talk with my dad and my coach because I really wanted to play quarterback, but I wasn't really getting the looks that I thought I should be getting.
Mm-hmm.
But my dad and my coach was basically like, don't let somebody tell you what you can't do. If you want to play quarterback, just continue to keep playing this season and something will fall in, you know, something will happen.
Love it.
And it actually did. You know, I was getting recruited to change my position to defensive back and receiver and athlete. And late December, that's when Illinois State kind of came into play. Late December, one of the coaches was from Detroit and was coming home to visit his mom for Christmas. And he somehow got hold of the story that the Free Press did. And I think like 3 days later, I was getting a call from the coaching staff at Illinois State and was going on my visit like the second or third week in January.
That's crazy how stuff works out like that.
Yeah. Had never, ever heard of Illinois State up until that point.
And that's the scary thing about recruiting. There's so many talented kids that just never get an opportunity to even get looked at. Like if that recruiter was never going home to see his family and never stumbled upon that article.
Yeah. I don't think that.
KG doing now? You know, and that's the crazy thing. So, man, I mean, that's some divine intervention right there. We'll take it.
That was kind of like the first time that I was like, you know, things happen for a reason.
No doubt. And you got to have that mindset when you're in football or any sport, really, because there's a lot of things, adversity that athletes got to go through. Fast forwarding to probably one of the craziest days in your life, May 19th, 2004, the whirlwind of you getting traded to the Argos from the Riders. And then later that day, traded to the Bombers. So was this like a back alley deal where you knew that you were going to end up with the Bombers? Or were you like, hey, I'm going to the Argos and I'm ready?
I think everybody knew that it was a backdoor deal. No, Winnipeg and Toronto knew that it was a backdoor deal. Saskatchewan and Kevin Glenn didn't know. You know, I called all my family members. I called all my friends. I was like, look, I'm about to be 4 hours, three and a half hours. Yeah. Right up the road, playing professional football. And then, and I got the call maybe like at 10 o'clock, 10:30 at night. And then the next morning, like all that was shut down by Adam Rita. Adam Rita said, well, we're sending you back to Winnipeg. And I'm like, Winnipeg? Like, what? Like, I was so distraught at the time. Like literally was like, but I mean, like you say, divine intervention, like it happened for a reason. I had my agent at the time was really good friends with Adam Rita. And I think my agent kind of knew a little bit what was going on, but didn't want to kind of like, I guess, let me know at the time. But he was kind of putting me in a better situation in Winnipeg than the situation that was in Toronto.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, like I said, that's when I got my first opportunity to start. So it panned out to be a pretty good, you know, pretty good deal.
What was conversation like with your family though? You just put them on the all time high. I'm coming close to home. And then you're like, oh wait, just kidding.
They were like, oh, okay. Kind of shocked. And like, oh, how far is Winnipeg?
Yeah.
with the drive and the trip. Oh man. So that means we won't be able to just drive up. We just still have to get on a plane. But they were still excited about the fact that I was still being able to continue, you know, to do something that I love as far as play professional football. So, but they were a little, you know, like, whoa, we thought we were going to be able to drive up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this kind of leads me to my next question, which we asked a lot of our guests on here. The difference between a free agent decision and being traded, where you're like, oh, well, that's where I'm going. We had Foley on last week, and he was talking about the difference between that. So just kind of getting your perspective as a quarterback, being traded, and then also making a decision in free agency.
Yeah, early on in my career, that the whole trade thing was like mind-boggling to me. It was kind of like – it was one of those things like – you couldn't control, you had no control over it. And it was kind of tough to kind of like just swallow the fact that a team could just trade you at any given moment, no matter how you were doing. You could be doing very well, but just they didn't see you in their future. And they were just getting rid of you or trade you to try to get something that they wanted for their future type thing. So I had to, you know, when I was younger, it was kind of tough. But as I got older, I started to understand it was a business. You know, you don't ever take any of this stuff personally. You know, I got traded by one of my very, very good friends, a guy who, when I came into the league, kind of took me under his wing, Jeremy O'Day. Yeah. You know, but at a point when he was the GM in Saskatchewan, he traded me to Montreal. So I know it. I know it wasn't like, I don't like you, Kevin, I'm trading you to Montreal. Mm-hmm. It was a business deal, and it was business, not personal. So as I got older, I understood that all these trades and stuff is not personal. It's just a business deal. My only thing was just be upfront with me. Don't try to hide behind it. I'm a grown man. I'm mature. Hey, if there's some indication that it might happen, just let me know. You know, I wasn't the one to go out and tell the newspaper and all that kind of stuff. I just wanted to know for myself, type thing.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe that in professional sports, everybody should have that opportunity to become a free agent, to where it's your decision to pick where you want to go. You know, it's tough with, you know, the CFL, because like us being Americans, you get put on an egg list. So even coming into the league, you don't necessarily always have the opportunity to pick where you want to go. But after you get here and you establish yourself, I think every player should have an opportunity to experience free agency, to be able to say, you know, I made this decision. Mm-hmm. You know, I made this decision and this is where I want to be. And just to, you know, to do the whole courting thing, you know, get calls from players, I mean, from GMs and actual teams, and basically, you know, tell them, you know, let them tell you what they like about you and how you fit into their plans and how they think that you're going to, you know, help this team be successful. Yeah, I think it's cool to do that.
It's good to feel wanted, not just liked, right? And
that's
a big thing. And the CFL is probably the one league where the players don't have the most power in terms of these decisions made. And so that's why I think free agency is such a big thing, like you're talking about, is make that decision for you. And then you feel much better about it. And then you go in with a great mindset. And I'm sure most guys play a lot better when coming through a free agency as opposed to when you get traded or when you're stuck with signing with one team.
Yes, it is. I mean, it's huge. You know, these other leagues have these like restricted free agents where you can opt out, and then the team, if one team has to offer you more than the other and all that kind of stuff. Like you said, with the CFL, it's kind of cut and dry. Either you're under contract or you're not, and you're a free agent. So,
yeah, the thing that shocked me when I signed my contract was the option year, but it's a team option, not a player option. And I think people don't realize that, right? In any other professional sport, it's usually a player option where you're like, no, it's okay. Here, it's like they always use the option unless you play very, very bad or just wasn't expectations. So that was something when my agent's like, yeah, you pretty much signed a 2-year deal because it's the club option and not your option.
That wording, that fine print wording. Yeah, that's why I used to be like, why do they even call it an option year? You signed a 2-year deal.
Yeah, there's no option.
It's like, you know, it's a one and an option. Well, it's always the team's option.
Yeah, exactly.
Team can cut you at any time, so it's always the team's option. But that wording in the contract, I don't know when it kind of like started, but it was kind of put in place to kind of make the player feel, oh yeah, I do have an option.
I got some control.
And I think it also had to do with the fact of when the NFL and the CFL had that agreement, it was kind of like in your option year, and that's where they use that term. So in your option year, you were able to go sign with an NFL team by a certain date. We know the team always has the option.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's been talk in the CFL about maybe adding a 10th team, the Atlantic Schooners. And I feel like they'd be missing out on a huge opportunity to sign you, to keep your streak alive, and maybe to sell some Kevin Glenn Schooner jerseys.
They won't lose out. We can always sign it. I can unretire, sign, and then retire back again if it needs to be done. I got full support from the family. We've already discussed this because, like, it's a possibility.
They
said, hey, the only thing is you can't play in a game.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Talking a little bit more statistically, twice in your career you eclipsed 5,000 yards, which is pretty incredible. Once in 2007, I believe, and once in 2010. Talk to me about the differences in the 5,000 yard years compared to, you know, when you're throwing for 2,000, 3,000, maybe even 4,000. Is it just the deep balls working, or is it a receiver thing? Like, what do you think is the major factor to eclipsing? Because that's a lot of yards in one season. Right.
It is. I think it has a lot to do with play calling. And like you said, also is whether or not the deep ball is working. And then also I think being balanced, like, because there's a couple times that I think I threw for like three or four, and you had a pretty good, you know, running back in the backfield to where you were a little bit more balanced than throwing a ball. Because I think in 10, I think we might have been throwing a ball a whole lot. If we go back to in 2010 and look at like the attempts per game are probably higher.
Oh yeah.
Than those other years. So, and then I think it also has to do with you know, some of those, you might have some of those big 400 or 500 yard games as far as throwing.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just, I think it's just sometimes just one of those years type of things.
Yeah, and you had it twice, which is impressive.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I will say that having the receivers also to be able to, you know, to do it is huge too. Because a lot of times when you see quarterbacks that throw for 5,000 yards, they end up having like four receivers over 1,000 too.
Yeah, good point.
I don't think we've ever seen a quarterback throw for over like 5,000 and him only have like two receivers over 1,000 type thing.
Yeah,
that's so you end up having a team full of receivers too that are eclipsing that, you know, 1,000 yard mark as far as receivers are concerned.
Yeah, exactly. And like we've talked about before, you played 18 years. I feel like you don't get that far into a professional career without understanding like kind of your strengths. And what would you consider like the best part of your game, or like what was your best throw, if you're kind of following what I'm saying?
I would say probably more of the like on time out routes. I was a big time I was a guy that anticipated throws very well. Like, so we ran a lot of option routes that year, I think in 2010, to where I could get a bead on the receiver, and when he put his foot in the ground, I knew which way he was going. And I could get the ball out of my hands quick enough to where when he was turning around, it was right there, and it didn't give DBs enough time to like react to it. You know, like throwing dig routes, you know, second window dig routes, or you know, curl flat combination type routes. I was able to anticipate holes in the defense and getting the ball there with like timing and touch, to where I didn't have to wait for a guy to come out of his break and like actually get open in order for me to say, hey, I'm about to throw it right now. I think I did that very well. I had a very quick release. Like I said, I think, and that came with the anticipation portion. I wasn't a big, you know, like long ball thrower. I just got the ball up in enough time before they got so far downfield. I had a coach tell me, you don't have to throw it 60 yards downfield if you throw it before they get to 60. So if you throw if you throw it up while he's at 30 and you put it in the right spot, he can run underneath it. So that's a lot of, you know, like post routes, go balls, that type of thing, corner routes. I just was a person who I was able to get the ball up sooner than later. So I didn't have a chance to, you know, like underthrow guys. And like I said, I was a pretty good, you know, like touch. I had a nice like touch on the ball and knew how to place the ball. I knew how to like make the guys catch the ball type thing. You can ask receivers that I played with, did I throw a catchable ball? And I think 90% of them will say, yeah, he did.
Mm-hmm. And that's so overlooked. And that was one of Ricky Ray's best features, I thought. And exactly. The receivers were like, hey, it's like smooth butter coming in here and I can catch it, and even contested catches. And even though you got the rocket arm, doesn't mean you have to throw it as hard as you can every single time. And so when I train my quarterbacks, I'm thinking like in a game, I probably have to throw it as hard as I can, maybe out of like 25 throws, maybe three times.
Exactly.
And they don't get that right now. And so they're just throwing it as hard as they can. I'm like, man, you're tearing up your receivers, gloves, face, chest, you know.
I hate playing catch with young, like middle school and high school quarterbacks. Yeah. I do the training right now, and I hate playing catch with them.
You got to wear gloves, or else you're going to come back with a bunch of blisters and bleeding. And you're like, man, was swollen that worth hands. It?
Like they're trying to throw a ball through a brick wall. I'm like, you don't have brick walls running out here as receivers. They'll like you and love you even more if you take them off.
No doubt. And I don't know if you saw our ending to last year, but I got to ask you, 18 years in the league, did you ever hit the crossbar with the pass?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, thanks, KT. that saved me right there.
I hit the upright too. Yeah, I think if you had, because the crossbar is in front of the end zone, I think in this league you do it more than typically.
Yeah, without a doubt. But it's just like so rare. I feel like even though it's in the front, it's like I feel like it's really rare to see it, especially on a game-winning last-second play of the game. Like that was.
Now that's the rare part of it.
Yeah, true.
If you tried to do it like five more times after that, you probably wouldn't.
Yeah, exactly.
I usually say. I'm like, on day three, every quarterback throws at the crossbar. I mean, in practice, exactly. You always just throw at it. And when you try and hit it, you never hit it. And the fact never that I wasn't trying to hit it, I doinked it right in the middle. Like, that's tough as a quarterback. That's a frustrating thing.
Well, I mean, it's like Coach Walsh always said, the goalpost, 98% air, 2% post.
Yeah. Yeah, and you hit the 2%, man. You need to buy a lottery ticket.
Right.
Oh man, that is awesome. So what we do is our final segment is called the 2-minute drill. I don't know if you've listened to our podcast, but basically we put 2 minutes on the clock. We ask you random questions and we see how many questions you can get through. Our current leaderboard, Bobby Jurison is number one with 23 questions he's gone through. Bag and Foley got 22, doubles and Fantu's 21, and Getzlaff at 20. So the only number to beat, we think it's a questionable number, but Ricky Ray had 9. So KG, I got hopes that you
gotta get better than 9. Come on.
Don't spend a minute on one question.
I'm ready.
Okay, so the way it works is I'll ask the first 10 questions, and then Isaac will ask the next 10, and I will start the timer after the first question. You ready to go, all KG? Right. We believe in you, man. All right, here we go. How many CFL passing yards do you have in your career?
52,000 and something.
Favorite Halloween candy?
M&M peanuts.
Pre-game superstitions?
I don't eat before game.
Where do you rank on the top CFL passing list?
Number 6.
Favorite scary movie you've watched?
Saw.
Does trash talk have a place in sports?
Yes.
Go-to pregame meal. This is hard.
Yeah, I don't eat, so I wouldn't know.
how fast can you chug a beer?
Probably 20 seconds, maybe.
Worst thing a fan has ever said to you?
Glenn, you suck.
Favorite Halloween costume you wore?
Favorite Halloween costume? Scream.
Favorite professional sports team?
Growing up, the Chicago Bulls.
What's your favorite cliche football phrase?
Favorite cliche football phrase? Get your hands off your knees. There's no air down
here. Favorite fictional character?
Black Panther.
Is a soft drink soda or pop?
Pop.
Who has the best jerseys in the CFL?
Right now, I would probably say Ottawa.
If you could choose one receiver you played with to throw to, game on the line, who is it?
Mill Steagle.
What's the best route in football?
Dig route.
What's the title of your autobiography if you wrote one?
The ups and downs of a CFL career.
What separates a good quarterback from a great one?
Film study.
The QB you were closest to during your playing days?
Parley Kahari Jones.
Time. 20 there, KG. That's what I'm talking about.
Let's go.
On the leaderboard. Man, tied with my man Getzlaff. That was pretty impressive. Before we get into it, you told us you had a food story for us. And now that you don't eat before games, I'm really curious to know, because you must have been like, I'm hungry. Get me a hot dog or something.
Starving.
Oh, after every game, I rush to go get something to eat. My family, everybody knows. The food story was, and it has to do with M&Ms. So I was 2004, Winnipeg. Stanley Jackson, Kahari Jones were the quarterbacks. Keith Stokes was our kick returner, and this is no lie. During the games, Stanley Jackson would have M&Ms on the sidelines. And he would give Stokes, whenever Stokes ate a green peanut M&M, he ran a punt back. And this is no lie.
No way.
So we're in a game, and I'm like, Stan, do you have any M&Ms? He's like, no, I don't have any. I don't have them on me. I'm like, we need a kick return. Stokes on the sideline. It's like a drug. Stokes is on the sideline. And he's like, man, I need the peanut M&M. I need the peanut M&M. M&Ms at halftime. Stanley gave Stokes one, and he ran it back. If you ask either one of them this question or just talk about this story, they'll definitely tell you it happened.
I love that story because it's something funny. So small, but we talked about this earlier in the show. Mentality is everything. And that little green M&M probably made him feel like a superhero, and he tried something that he usually wouldn't, and he goes and scores.
He scores. I was like, this is so crazy.
That is incredible.
We kind of kept it to ourselves for a long time because we didn't want nobody to know that we was on the sidelines eating M&M.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. But if they find out, hey, it's working for you guys, man.
It worked. It worked, yeah. Right.
I'm sure fans would be throwing them on the field for you.
Yeah, we're pretty far removed from Winnipeg in that year. Yeah. So get mad at us now.
Yeah, exactly. You ain't running gassers anymore, so you're good. all right, so we go over some of these. How fast can you chug a beer? 20 seconds, KG?
Yeah.
Man.
I honestly don't know. I've never done it, so. I know that's kind of sad, but I haven't.
Worst thing a fan ever said to you? I'm sure there's some things that you probably know in your mind that you couldn't say, but 18 years, I'm sure you've heard some crazy things there. Favorite Halloween costume, what'd you say there?
The scream mask.
Oh, the scream mask. Yeah. Did you have the one where you pump the thing and the blood runs down it?
No, it was just a regular scream mask. Oh,
gotcha. Yeah. They really like classic. That was like their number one seller. So they had to like make all these upgrades to it. And now it's like crazy what they come up with. M&M's Halloween candy. That was awesome. Best foot route in football, the dig route, huh?
I was going to say we call it the stick nod. Yeah. That was a pretty good one too.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people got it, but I just went with the dig route.
Especially down in the red zone.
Maybe because this week we're running a lot of dig routes over the middle. They open up the middle of the field. So maybe that's what was on my mind from doing game plan this week.
Gotcha. Okay. The cliche football phrase that hung you up for about 20 seconds, KG. You could work on the leaderboard.
I know.
Yeah. Man, mine is like when you're in halftime and you're down. And it's like, they're not doing, you're like down by like 20 and they're or 30. And they're like, they're not doing anything to beat us. I'm like, yeah, 30.
They are killing us.
or the old phrase where, all right, we just got to score. Stop them. Score. Stop them. Score. Upside down. Score.
I had a kid tell me that the other day. I was training him. And he goes, I go, get your hands off your knees and stand straight up. There's no air down there. There's air everywhere, coach.
I got a title for your autobiography. This one's free for when you decide to use it. The People's Quarterback.
Ooh.
I like that.
Decent.
KG, we appreciate you coming on the show. This was a blast. I know our listeners are going to absolutely love this interview. Man, we appreciate you and learned a lot. I know for us, we're going in and we're not even halfway to where you got career-wise. So, man, it's good, a good role model to have and a great ambassador for the league for sure.
Thank you, guys.
I appreciate you guys having me on the show. I'm going to start making sure now I tune into all of them now so I can see those two-minute drills.
Yeah, you're top five, man. You're top five. You got to hold it.
Thank you for listening to The Rouge Report, presented by Young's Equipment.
A Rough Rider podcast.
The Rouge Report is brought to you by Young's Equipment, your Case IH dealer in southern Saskatchewan. Young's is home to a wide selection of new and used Case IH combines to meet your needs for any size farm. Their experienced technicians and a wide selection of parts will keep you running all season. Go to youngs.ca and use podcast code Rouge, R-O-U-G-E, for your chance to win a Rider's Prize package.